Jackson to the end zone. Touchdown, Texas Tech.
Ezukama for the touchdown.
Hand off to Marcus Fields. Down the sideline. Touchdown, Red Raiders.
Welcome one and welcome all to the Air Raid Podcast presented by Viva the Matadors. You are on once again with your boy, I'll be sure. And we got my new right-hand man, Jeremy Gillen, with us today. What's up, Jeremy?
I have ascended. I am above Dylan now. I'm feeling it.
You've been promoted. I mean, but without all the perks of being promoted, like, you know, producing and editing and, you know, making the podcast what it is, Dylan's still doing that behind
the scenes. Is that perks?
And everything else, you've been promoted.
That's perks? That sounds like responsibility. Yeah. I'm not about that. I'm all about the title.
That's fair.
Not at all about the responsibility.
That's fair. I mean, it doesn't come with a pay increase.
Yeah. None of these positions do. So
You still get how much? You like $2 a month or whatever? However much I get.
One Pabst Blue Ribbon a month, and that call it quits.
Hey, there you go. There you go. Now on to players that don't get anything per month. Texas Tech football team. The way they played on Saturday sure looked like it. Losing 31-15 to the Iowa State Cyclones. Jeremy, what are your first thoughts after Saturday's game?
You know, we have gotten progressively worse as the season has gone on. You have a win against Houston Baptist, right? We win the first week, and then we have a moral victory against UT, a game you should have won, like you said. I remember on the recap you did on the Air Raid Podcast Twitter, which was dope. And then we have Kansas State, which we were never in, and then all of a sudden, Iowa State, which we didn't even have a chance. Kansas State is a game that felt like we could have come back or been in it. Iowa State.
We were up in the fourth quarter against Kansas
State. So Kansas State, good fight. Iowa State, absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. It took us four quarters to get our first offensive touchdown. So this was, I am terrified of the rest of the season. I'll put it that way.
I'll say this, and I kind of talked about it on the recap, is that I don't necessarily feel like our defense has gone backwards, but the offense assuredly has, right? Like, the offense just looked dead in the water. And don't get me wrong, Iowa State consistently has a good defense. Every year we've talked about it since Matt Campbell's been there. And when you go into Iowa, especially on the road in Iowa State, it's going to be a tough time as an offensive unit going against their defense. They have shut us down even during the Cliff Kingsbury era. But to go 3.5 quarters without getting a single touchdown, to go 3.5 quarters with really not being able to muster much on the offensive side of the ball at all. I mean, it was definitely a rough night for Bowman and company. So let's talk about the offensive side of the ball, and let's talk about Alan Bowman. Alan Bowman, 13 for 22, 97 yards, a QBR of 27.8. I'm really just spouting out stats, hoping that it would sound better for him, but it really doesn't. That's about as bad as he played. What do you have to say about Bowman's performance?
This is not good. I mean, it's a bad look when we have Texas Tech, gunslinging Texas Tech, cannot sling the gun at all. Bowman did not look confident in this game, and the team started to deflate around him as the minutes went on, and you just kind of felt it. This was a long, drawn-out game where nothing is exciting and you're just kind of waiting for it to end. Interesting stat that I pulled up earlier was something I've been disappointed with Bowman, and it could be a Yost thing, but in 2018, Bowman attempted like two or more 30-plus yard passes a game in every game he was in, and this year he's only attempted one in 3.5 games. So, like, there's this either lack of confidence from the offensive coordinating side of it or a lack of ability, which I don't understand how that would happen, from Bowman's side of things. But there's something's not meshing up, and we're just not attacking down the field anymore. Good grief. The he threw a seam, I think, in the third quarter. It was, like, one of his longest pass of the day. I think that was a Dalton Rigdon. This is not an inspiring performance for somebody who's supposed to be QB number one. Somebody who came back and was supposed to be like the guy in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, so the question becomes here is this, before I even get into that, is that I put it on my Twitter, and I asked, who do you blame for this offensive inability? And it was between Alan Bowman, Yost, coach, offensive coordinator Yost, head coach Wells, or the Iowa State defense. Most people put it on Yost. Actually, Bowman came third in the poll behind Yost and Wells. Do you put it more on Yost or on Bowman?
What was the question again?
Just the offensive inability, just the ability not to be able to move the ball down the field.
See, I want to put it on Yost. If we are saying that, you know, Wells, the only way you insert Wells into that is he not pulling Bowman? If he pulls Bowman, do we get more production earlier? So that's just like, that's a non-factor for me. So I think it comes down to Yost. I think the play calling is not great. Just not great. How can you get any confidence off of it? At least for Bowman, there is some kind of I do not understand. I don't understand why, if he is just coming, Bowman coming out is like the studliest quarterback in practice or something, and then just like devolving on the game on the field. I don't understand why there is still this big disconnect, because I put it on Yost.
Well, I'll say this. So with the quarterback position, it is a little different, right? So like whenever a guy is your starter, he's your starter until he's not. And it's kind of hard to kind of – you don't want to flip-flop, or you don't want to, you know, pull a guy that's struggling like that, because it can really hurt with the guy's psyche, and that's the most important position on the field. So I get why the second that you announce Bowman as your starter, you got to ride him until you can't anymore. That being said, last week when we talked about Bowman on the podcast, it was with the thought in mind that he wouldn't even play this game. He had just come off of a pretty bad ankle injury against K-State, and it was the idea that that ankle injury is going to take some time to heal. And throughout the practice, he barely practiced. I think he only practiced one day this past week. And in my opinion, was if he's not fully healthy, doesn't make sense for him to play. Now, I'll say this about Alan Bowman: I don't think he looked healthy in this game. I know there hasn't been any reports, and not a lot of people are really talking about it, but I personally, from the very first, I saw him limping on the very first drive. I don't think he looked healthy in this game whatsoever. And I think that's a big reason why he was captain check down during this game. I think he didn't have a lot of, the few times I saw him try to throw deep, it floated on him a little bit. It didn't seem like he was able to really step through in his throws. He didn't look healthy. That in itself, I think you put on Wells more than anybody, because if your quarterback doesn't look healthy, why is he playing when Columbia, at least, at the very least, Columbia looked good enough to, from last week to,
well, he, you know, he gets most of the practice time, like you said, he gets most of the practice time against this Iowa State 3-5. We know this defense is tremendous in the Big 12. So you have Columbia, who is familiar with Yost's system, practicing in Yost's system, even at a different university, for most of the week against Iowa State's defense. Bowman comes in the last day, gets a few reps, and then all of a sudden you trot Bowman out there. Like you said, doesn't even look healthy. And I hate playing this game of like, Bowman just wasn't healthy. If we get him healthy, he'll be, you know, back and ready to go. How about we just try something else? How about we try something else for a second here? Because it's very frustrating, as you can tell.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I don't think we can always play the game of, because he didn't look like. I've always believed that if you play, the excuse of injury is thrown out the window.
Right? Yeah.
It's gone, in my opinion. So I do believe that Bowman wasn't healthy, and I do believe that Bowman, that Wells should have made the decision to go for the 100% Columbia over the whatever percentage Bowman is. At the same time, what Bowman showed us wasn't very good. He only had 5 first downs in 8 drives, right? So we talk about Henry Columbia, who came in with in the end of the fourth quarter when the game was already over. It was 31-7. And in those 2 drives, he also had 5 first downs, right? So what do you think about Henry Columbia? Now, I will say, against Iowa State's defense, obviously had let up by that point, right? Iowa State's defense had obviously let up. It wasn't the same fierce defense that had been playing Bowman all game. So you do have to take his stats with a grain of salt in that aspect. But Henry Columbia didn't look bad. What do you think?
I think he came out confident. I think he came out like a guy who has been practicing all week for this defense. I mean, first fourth down conversion of the day, first red zone presence of the day, first guy to hit a receiver in the end zone twice, despite one getting called back, you know, which brought our first offensive touchdown of the day, first two-point conversion of the day, first to break 100 passing yards of the day. I tweeted all this in sad jest at the end of the game. He looked confident, and I like that. I like that he's mobile. I like that he's slinging it. Every pass he had, I felt like, okay, it is either going to the receiver or to nobody. Bowman's passes, that pretty much the whole game made me feel like, oh, guys, it's going to be a duck. Is it going to get picked off? Is this going to go back to the house? Columbia had a lot more swagger and confidence coming onto the field in the fourth quarter than I think Bowman ever exhibited during that game. And so for that alone for me, I'm like, you know what? Why? We are 1-3, 0-3 in conference. How about we just run Columbia at the number one next week and see what happens? Or, you know, after the bye week. Like, let's see what happens. Can this guy carry that confident momentum, the mobility, the dart that he was showing us at Iowa State? Can he carry that through a whole game? Because what do you have to lose? You go 1-4 and everybody, nobody's surprised? Your own foreign conference? No. Might as well see if Columbia is the guy who is best suited for this team.
And I did say that also in the recap was that I do think this is the perfect time to make the change. And it sounds like from the post-game conversation, Wells definitely left that open, definitely said they need to review the tape. They, you know, when asked in post-game. And usually when a coach is asked about coaching, about quarterback changes, and he says that they need to review the tape and make a decision, safe to say that a quarterback change is happening. Now, not a guarantee, but I mean, they're going to watch the tape, and I've seen the tape. They're probably switching to Columbia. This is the perfect time to do it. You have 2 weeks before West Virginia to get him ready as QB1. I do think this is the perfect time to make that change. At this point, we've kind of seen what happens. Now, mind you, I'm changing course here. Remember, just last week I was talking about how I do believe that Bowman is a much more talented quarterback. And I still believe that Alan Bowman is more talented than Henry Columbia. That being arm talent. That being said, Columbia just provides more consistency. And football players know, like football players, his teammates see the same thing we're seeing. They see Alan Bowman only throwing 97 yards. They see the check down. They see the dinks and dunks with Bowman. And then they see Columbia go in and score a touchdown. And teammates, all they want is the best quarterback on the field. They don't want the politics of everything else. They just want the best quarterback on the field. And I think what's funny is that it was brought up that Dalton Rigdon's, I think, dad tweeted about how quarterbacks get special treatment and how they wish they got treated like everybody else on the team. And yes, Juan, that is a ridiculous tweet, but it does show
would you be surprised? Anybody else's dad? Come on. Had to be Dalton
Rigdon's. It's a ridiculous tweet. But I will say this. It does, I do think, kind of show you the pulse of the team. I'm not saying that it's Dalton Rigdon even feels this way. It's probably most likely it's an independent thought from the dad, but you got to imagine that something's being trickled up there, and that's how the teammates are feeling. I think this is not only just a decision with to switch to Columbia would be good for, you know, the team's ability, but also the psyche of the players, knowing that, okay, well, this is the quarterback that's looked better in the last 2 weeks that we're going to.
And this is certainly not a metric that can be really like revisited, because after, you know, a couple hours of watching this game, when Columbia comes out, it seemed, again, here's the key word, it seemed as if the offensive line was blocking harder. It seemed like the receivers were trying harder to get into open spaces, trying to make more catches. Like it felt like there was a revival into the lifeline of the offense. Now, it could have been the exact same when putting a capable quarterback in there just kind of got it going. But it felt like they responded, like you said, it felt like they responded to somebody who is coming out there confident, slinging it, and trying to win the game. Even, you know, with 5 minutes left on the clock, the tempo, everything just changed.
For sure. For sure. Was there anybody else on the offensive side of the ball that stuck out to you at all? I mean, it was kind of tough just period to get anything going against the defense.
Yeah, two guys, two wide receivers, of course, Eric Ezukama and Jalen Polk are two of my favorite guys from the Iowa State game. I think Jalen Polk shows a lot of talent. He's got really good hands. And he showed, like, if it's in his window of catchability, it's probably going to be a catch there. And Eric Ezukama, I mean, back-to-back, the same play. That's another thing I liked, is that you had Ezukama run the post, not the post, the fade into the end zone, gets caught, you know, caught a touchdown, taken back. They run the exact same play because they knew that Ezukama could make it. Ezukama hauls it in, touchdown, and it gets reviewed again, but he's like, no, 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 that is a touchdown. And, you know, that was our first and last offensive touchdown of the day. So I was happy with those two guys. What about you?
Bold choice choosing our top two yards from scrimmage people. Yeah, really bold. Like, who'd you like the most? Well, I'll take the two guys that did the most. Alex? All right.
Who did you like the most?
Okay.
I like the guy who rode the bench. He really got me motivated.
Oh, man. He was good. He was good. Nobody else played any good. So that's what you want to say.
Hey, everybody else. If Dylan was on here, he'd be like, John Holcomb. You know, he caught the ball three times.
Yeah. I did see Holcomb's name. I'm not going to mention it. But
forget you, Dylan. You should be here to defend yourself. Next.
No, the offense just wasn't any good for me to say anybody. I will say this, because you brought up a good point with Eric Ezukama and that play. Another thing, and I can't remember if it was you or Dylan that said it last week about Yost being more willing to open up the playbook with Columbia. And I didn't necessarily believe it, but you saw it in this game, right? Like, that play to Ezukama was not run once with Alan Bowman. And it does kind of seem like maybe Yost is also more comfortable with Henry Columbia, which, again, is weird that he didn't start this game to begin with. But enough about Columbia. Enough about this offense and how poorly they did. Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about the defense. And before we even talk about the defense, Zach McPherson.
Hey,
you got a block from Eli Howard on the field goal, mm-hmm. and then Zach McPherson to the house, giving us a 7-0 lead where we felt happiness for about 2 seconds until the world came collapsing down. as far as the defense itself, I said before, Iowa State for the first three drives looked like they could do no wrong, and then after that, they were kind of held in check by this defense. What do you think?
Yeah, this is a defense that responded, that made adjustments. And I think you really got to give some credit to the defensive staff as a whole, making those adjustments. Brock Purdy and this offense, this Iowa State offense, they have a lot of weapons, especially those tight ends. I mean, there's only so much you can do against the corn-fed boys from Iowa. But I was really happy with this defense. And I saw it put best. Like, this is the defense that would have carried Cliff Kingsbury to 6 consecutive bowl games. Like, this is the competent defense you needed for Texas Tech to be a strong Big 12 team with just an adequate offense. And we didn't have an adequate offense this game, so we couldn't tell. But I'm with you. I think this defense did everything that they could to keep this. I mean, 31-15, I'm surprised it won another 66-6 game with the way this team was playing.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that now, once again, we never can get both sides of the ball working. I mean, I think the defense has now gotten much better after we talked about in the Texas game, they played really well, but the last 3 minutes and 13 seconds, I'm going to mention 3 minutes and 13 seconds every podcast we have from here to the end of the year. But with 3 minutes and 13 seconds, outside of that and overtime, they played pretty well. Kansas State, you give up only 31 points. I think you should win any Big 12 game. And then now, once again, you only give up 31 points. I think the defense has played much better. We can't really complain about this defense as much this year. Now, I'm not saying they're good or great or anything like that by any metric, but they're not bad, which, I mean, come on, people. It's Texas Tech we're talking about here. Not bad is all we ask for on defense.
Yeah.
And usually that should be good enough to win any type of football game. So let's first start off with the who was your defensive player of the game?
Man, I have got to give it to DeMarcus Fields for being on the field this game, blocking, or like being with Charlie Kohler for most of the game was keying up on Kohler. I mean, Kohler, 6'6 dude, 200 whatever the hell it matters pounds, and then you got DeMarcus Fields, who is 6 foot, probably not, guarding him the whole game, and had multiple you know, multiple opportunities where he kept Kohler from getting easy yardage. So I just really, I appreciate that David and Goliath situation. And DeMarcus Field just really strutting himself around on the field and making it hard for Purdy to pick up an otherwise easy target.
You're not going to big up your boy Eric Monroe?
You know, well, here's my philosophy. If a safety ever leads your team in tackles, you're having a crap game.
Fair. But Eric Monroe also showed up in the run game as well. Mm-hmm. He was there. Now, sometimes he showed up in the run game because Breece Hall made it past the first two defenders. But that's besides the point.
Yeah.
I think Eric Monroe was his presence was definitely felt for the first time as a Red Raider, I would say. But my defensive player of the game was Zach McPherson. The first play already was a really good one. He also did a really good job as far as defending a lot of the receivers. Brock Purdy did have 300 yards this game, but it was a lot of short dinks and dunks. He wasn't able to really get much going through the air in terms of big plays or anything like that. I think Zach McPherson really had a really good
game. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, so I was looking this up, and I do find it funny because we're trying to big up the defense here. We're trying to say how much better the defense is and this, that, and the other. Are we being sincere when we say the defense is that much better, or are we just coming from a place of just awfulness? Because if you look it up, Texas Tech Red Raiders currently, as currently constructed, are giving up the fourth most yards per game and the fourth most passing yards per game. Including, and also giving up the sixth most points per game. Now, that a lot of that has to do with the ridiculous Texas game. So if you take away the Texas game, I do think the average is a little bit better. Mm. But the average is still in the 30s. So are we being a little disingenuous when we say the defense has gotten that much better? Or is it that numbers do lie?
You know, I think it's one of those things where you're looking at this defense and it's just been so bad for so long that you love to see another team have a three and out, or for the defense to hold them, for special teams to have some kind of big play. Like you're finally seeing some effort on the defensive side, and we have, so even though it's really really terrible, like it is better than it used to be, right? Even if it's just one, literally one spot, it's a little better.
Yeah, we went from the third worst passing defense in the country to the fifth worst passing defense.
Yeah, it is, man, it is so hard when you play some quarterbacks in this league to not just get ripped a new one, especially with where we're coming from. But I think there's more fight in the team and more cohesiveness. So that's all I can really say about it. We are better, but better is a pejorative term. You got to figure out what better means to you.
That's fair. That is fair. Now, again, like we'll say, well, as the season goes on, we'll play different teams. In my opinion, we've already played two of the best quarterbacks we'll play in this conference, and Sam Ehlinger and Brock Purdy. Mm-hmm. You were about to say Skylar Thompson. I'll give Sam some credit. I mean, I still think he sucks, but I don't mean, I don't think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the conference.
We
still got to play TCU's quarterback. That'll help our stats, right? Yeah. We got to play Kansas' quarterback. That'll help our stats.
Hold on now. Don't say it out loud.
It'll help our stats.
There we go.
Right. But we haven't played Spencer Rattler yet. So who's Mr. Get Big Stats, but don't really do a lot with it. So, we'll see on that front. But I do think that it's tough talking about Texas defense, because with Texas defense, I've always felt that numbers lie, especially in the Big 12 in general. Numbers do lie. It doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. I do think Texas defense, especially in the last 2 weeks, have played decent games. Even if this week Brock Purdy put up 300 yards and the offense scored 31 points, first quarter and a half, defense was pretty bad. From that point on, I thought they played really good. And the numbers in this game will lie, but it's encouraging. I just wish the offense was much more encouraging.
Well, to your point, Keith Patterson's whole bend, don't break defense mentality is kind of lets that happen. It's like, hey, I don't care what the stats are at the end of the day, but if we keep them from putting up more points, like if we keep them from putting up points, that's a big win. So, you know, 600 yards passing, but they only get, you know, 21 points. That's really lopsided. So I think Patterson has just a totally different approach and hopes that he has an offense that can back him up on that pedagogy.
Not a lot of broken tackles either. This is a sure tackling defense.
Hey, you're not
wrong. I gotta
give
them that.
Yeah.
We have. This is now. I do think that sometimes they struggle with, you know, getting outrun in certain situations and maybe not pursuing correctly. But when it comes to tackling, we don't see a lot of arm tackles. We see a lot of sure one-on-one tackles in open field, which is definitely something to be excited about. So, Jeremy, we have talked about. We've already kind of started talking about the Big 12, some of the Big 12 quarterbacks are going to play. Those Big 12 quarterbacks did all play this past weekend. So we haven't really done it much this season. So let's go ahead and talk about the games that we saw this week. Did you watch this week?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of the classic Red Raider. Might as well be. The Red River rivalry with the.
So let's get into the Red River rivalry, shall we? 22nd, for some reason, ranked Texas Longhorns versus the unranked, for good reason, Oklahoma Sooners. And what was the crappiest Red River rivalry of all time? Like, I guess it's a good game by the letter of the law because it was close and it went to, what, quadruple overtime. And yeah. This was the first time I've ever watched this game, and I was like, man, these are two bad teams.
Honestly.
What did you think of this?
Yeah, game? No, it was so back and forth. For, you know, OU kind of came out a little hotter. They were the ones put up points first. You're like, okay, well, maybe this is an OU game, especially with Texas coming off a loss.
But it was back and forth of crap.
It was back. It was slinging poop. But
it wasn't like back and forth of like, ooh, nice
no,
play.
No, I didn't say that.
Nice play. Rattler.
I was just like, Texas is behind. OU is going to win this. And then OU starts playing terrible defense. And let's Texas.
Oh, Oklahoma! They Texas Tech'd it.
Oh,
they
like,
Texas
what are you
Tech'd
doing?
Bad.
And then it was back and forth. I was like, I don't know who I want to win this game. I wish it could just nobody win this game because nobody should, because they're gonna get credit for nothing. They're like, Oklahoma, Texas, they survived. They fought them hard. They're like, no, they just sucked less in the end. That's what happened.
They fought them hard.
Sooners, they're gonna win the Big 12. I'm like, yeah, they got a win in conference finally. Congratulations.
My favorite part was when Texas's field goal was blocked and Oklahoma thought, oh, it's easy, we're just gonna win this game easily, we're not gonna play any real offense, just for them to miss the field goal right afterwards. That was the epitome of this game.
I cried in joy.
So Oklahoma did end up winning the game because the next drive they did what they should have done already, which is quickly score a touchdown. So they won the game 53-45. And like I said, what was the worst Red River rivalry of all time. Nobody should feel good about that game whatsoever. And it actually makes me feel better about both teams. And I wish Tech was better because this is any team in the conference could win this year. I mean, everybody's bad, right? Everybody's bad. Yeah. So these were not the only two games. The Tech game and the Red River rivalry were not the only two games this week. TCU played this week in what can be only known as one of the worst jerseys I think I've ever seen. They did lose 21-14 to the other purple team, the Kansas State Wildcats. What did you think about this game?
I did not see it. Tell me about it.
Oh, well, TCU lost 21-14.
Oh, shoot.
The Kansas State Wildcats.
Shoot.
So first of all, these jerseys are all – when TCU, like, wants to do
is
this
the purple
and red thing.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Why? It's always bad. Like, I don't know who decided that this is, like, that colors work with each other. They're awful. And it showed in their play, right? Everybody in this game sucked. Will Howard played again because Kansas State, they actually made the right choice and let their starting quarterback sit because, you know, they, I guess, care about trying to attempt. But Will Howard is just as bad as he looked against Tech. Max Duggan came back out and played. And remember, he can't throw the ball past 5 yards. So once again, he couldn't throw the ball past 5 yards. This was a really boring, unexciting, nothing to do game. And Kansas State won. And actually, Kansas State right now is in the driver's seat in this conference, if you ask me.
No, I agree. They are showing a lot more fight than I think anybody was expecting. I mean, because I'm trying to think of the preseason. They were right above us. Maybe it's 7-6?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it was like, you know, they feel like they got some weapons, but not sure about the coaching, you know, not sure about this quarterback. I remember a lot of questions about quarterback. And then they come out and they're fighting. I mean, 3-0 in conference already. Like, that is prestigious in 2020, people. Like, they have earned it. I mean, the game against TCU, if you have 14-21, it doesn't seem as dominating, but let's not forget that TCU does have a good defense. And for Kansas State to come out of there with a win, they could do it. I mean, they have to face, what is it, Texas left? Texas is the only other, like, perennial, you know?
At least they got to play Iowa State, who's also undefeated in conference.
We have shifted our champions. Our powerhouses are moving north.
I picked Iowa State to win the conference already. So they lost to Louisiana and made me look like an idiot, but they're now 3-0 since. So
it's a team that can learn something from loss. I wish we did that. Yeah. Let me tell you something I was thinking about earlier today. I literally was like, I was in the grocery store. I was picking up some milk. He needs some milk. I was picking up some milk, and I swear I had an epiphany of like, wow, I think Iowa State is the team Matt Wells wishes he had. Like, I think he looks at Iowa State and he's like, I wish I could do that. Because Iowa State, for all intents and purposes, seems like a team outside of like their advanced like defensive ability because of their formation. I think that Iowa State's like a better version of what Texas Tech is, just generally. Am I wrong on that?
No, I think that's what Kirby Hokut was looking for, a guy that can maximize talent as much as possible, and that's what Matt Campbell does, right? Iowa State still doesn't really recruit that well. I mean, they do. So I think they recruit a little bit better than they used to before he got there, but they're still not a powerhouse in recruiting. I mean, Tech out recruits Iowa State people. Who wants to go to Iowa? But he maximizes their talent. And now he actually has a quarterback that, and since he was there, the players around have always been good, but the quarterback's been a question mark. Now he has a quarterback that matches the talent all the way around. Even if Brock Purdy hasn't necessarily developed much better, out the gate he came in pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's
his starting position is higher than most quarterbacks around the country.
Exactly. So anything you want to tell the people?
Oh, man, hang in there, baby, because basketball is coming up. I'm feeling good about
basketball
this season.
Is coming up.
Feeling good.
Yeah, Oklahoma State, they had a virtual open practice to the fans. Wow. So that means basketball is coming soon. It starts in like 3 weeks.
Oh, man. So close.
Yeah. So I don't think – this is probably the most excited Tech has ever been for basketball season. I find that hilarious. So we do have no game this week. It's a bye week as hopefully Henry Columbia gets ready for West Virginia. Next time you listen to the Air Raid podcast, hopefully you have more information about that. We can talk about Henry Columbia or Alan Bowman's trip to West Virginia, which if it wasn't for COVID, I would be at. But unfortunately, I will not be because of COVID. So it is what it is. Yeah, I mean, it's tough, guys. It's tough. We talked at the beginning of the season, we said it was going to be a long season for the Red Raiders. And though they made it seem like maybe it'd be a shorter season with almost wins against Texas and Kansas State, this team is who we thought they were. So, the Texas Raiders, Red Raiders do fall to 1-3, and, we'll see what happens going forward. Make sure to follow the podcast at Air Raid Podcast on Twitter. Follow Jeremy at Jeremy Dane. Follow me at Mr_AlbieShore. And you've been listening to the Air Raid Podcast. Whenever I've been the Matadors, as always, stay wrecked, people.